Good afternoon. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the Wake Up Call. We're trying to get ourselves organized. It may even happen pretty soon, but in the meantime, we'll let you listen to whatever this CD is out there. Thank you.
Take your file and you bend my head. You never can remember anything I've said. You promised to love me, but what do I know? You're always spilling juice on me like you got some place to go. Odds and ends, odds and ends. Lost time is not found again.
I don't think I have a clue.
I'll just hold it, I guess. I don't know what's wrong with this.
Big dumb blonde with a wheel all gorged, and Turtle, that friend of hers, with his checks all forged, his cheeks in a chunk with his cheese in the cash. They're all gonna be there at that $1 million bash. Ooh, baby.
Okay, I'll go for it. Hi, this is the radio show, The Wake Up Call. We're here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 o'clock, and we're getting a little bit of a late start today, but I'm glad you're listening. And we're very happy today to have an old friend of mine from the School of Social Work from back in the 70s, Jeff Starkweather, and he's with Pittsburgh Matters, which we're going to find all about it, and he's brought his colleague and co-founder of Pittsburgh Matters, Amanda Robertson, and so we're very delighted that they're here. Chatham County is our neighbor, and Wilf, we have a very strong relationship with Moncur. A few years back, they had a strike, and we were there every week, and now we consider Chatham almost our home county. We're close to it. So we care what happens there, and a lot is happening, some of it good and some of it not so good. So welcome, Jeffrey and Amanda. Glad you could come.
Thanks, Lori.
Glad to be here.
Okay. So, Pittsburgh Matters. What do you need to make matter in Pittsburgh?
You want to start? Why don't we? Pittsburgh Matters is a citizen organization that was started when we, 2 years ago, the development called Chatham Park, which is a group out of Cary, Preston Development. They did the Prestonwood and done a lot of greenfield developments. And they had been... Pittsburgh had been talking, and Chatham had been talking for a number of years about a mixed-use development that was supposed to be sustainable, supposed to preserve the environment, and without really informing anybody what was going on, all of a sudden we were faced with the largest mixed-use development in the history of North Carolina, which would have 22,000 residences, 22 million square feet of commercial and retail, and it was right on 7,000 acres on the edge of Pittsburgh, a town of 4,000. And it would have 55,000 people, and they're going to put a bypass through. And so we felt that there should be a citizen involvement process, that we should bring in outside experts. We had one planner, and that we should take our time. And the developers had basically been pushing for some time behind the scenes. Nobody knew this was going on. And basically, they thought they could get this thing through in 6 months. Now, development of this size would probably take 15 years in Orange County or Chapel Hill or Carrboro. It would take at least 5 years in any community of any size. And so we brought in, well, we petitioned, and we were able to convince the board, actually, to bring in some outside consultants. And one of the big recommendations is this development is right on the Haw River, right on Jordan Lake, and which is our water source, which is the water source for Cary, potentially for Owosa, potentially for Durham. And when you put a development of that size, you're risking the quality of water. So we wanted to preserve a large part of that. Plus, it's the only contiguous forest, really, in the whole area. It's in that area.
And the consultants agreed.
And we also wanted to make sure that they had impact analysis on traffic, on the environment, on
socioeconomic,
on fiscal, the impact on costs. And for one meeting, the town said, hey, this is a good idea. The next meeting, took them behind closed doors one by one, lobbied them, threatened that they'd form their own town, gave them all kinds of bull.
Chatham Park did.
And they approved it. So we've taken them to court.
Okay.
And since that time, since our lawsuit was filed back in July, we have forced them to now three times revise their master plan because they did not follow the proper procedures. And they've each time they've done it, everybody that spoke at the public hearing spoke against it. But they're proceeding on. So our lawsuit's continuing. And this is a totally citizen-financed lawsuit. We've raised approximately $50,000, but we have, we still owe our lawyers the money because they have unlimited funds. So this is a citizen effort. So,
and that's what makes this so difficult when you're fighting against a large corporation like that, where they have unlimited money, and you all are regular folk citizens. I mean, that's amazing that you were able to raise $50,000, which says that, Jeffrey, you and Amanda have been doing a lot of organizing. How did you do that? I mean, how do you raise that kind of money?
Well,
going around with barbecues? That's amazing.
Well, you know, it's something that really shocked me and humbled me. And from the very beginning, Jeffrey's kind of old hat at this because he's been, working in activism for many, many years. And so, he was fairly confident, but we went into this thinking it would be $25,000 to $35,000, and it's going to be a lot more than $50,000 by the time it's all said and done. But, the citizens, and it's a small town, but we've got a lot of people that realize the impact up in Carrboro and Chapel Hill. They understand that the massiveness of this is going to impact the entire region. I mean, this
exactly.
is the largest unfragmented piece of land left in the Triangle area. It's just, it's unbelievable. So people are, really upset, and people really did get out and talk to the town, and you wouldn't have believed it. It was just a wonderful, heartfelt thing. But we got out very early, even before Pittsburgh Matters was a company, before we formed a little over a year ago, just as a grassroots group of, just citizens. And we went door to door just to make sure citizens knew, door to door, all of us, all over town, letting them know, here, one hearing's coming up. This is what's going on. We had people sign up a list so that we could send out emails and just keep people informed that way. So we've been working really hard for almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years probably around August when, everybody pulled together kind of as just a local group. And we formed officially about a year ago in July. It'll be a year this July. We'll have to celebrate. But it's really, it truly is. It's
Independence Day, July 4th, you are struggling for Chatham's independence. I did not realize, I knew there was some big, you know, I haven't paid the attention that I'm sorry, I should have, but I did not realize it was one of the biggest ones that in the history of the state.
Actually, it would be either 5 or 6 largest in the United States. History. You got to remember.
That's incredible.
It's been since the 1960s. When you think about Reston and Columbia, something called the Woodlands, those things were built in the early 60s, and they were designed originally to be alternatives to sprawl.
Yeah.
The problem with those, which unfortunately these developers obviously haven't gone up there to see the problems, they created sprawl because they became major magnets for jobs and shopping. And for an example, Reston, which is almost the exact same size as Chatham Park would be.
Where is that at?
Reston is between Washington, D.C. and Dulles Airport. It's like halfway between, maybe 15, 20 miles outside of D.C. At the time, it was in the country. Actually, I went and visited there because I was studying planning school in D.C. when it was first being designed. And so it was very idealistic what it would be. But it is the most expensive community in the Washington, D.C. area to live. And Washington, D.C. area is one of the top 3 most expensive places in the United States to live. So think what an impact this would have on Pittsburgh, which was kind of becoming the new car borough of the area. And it would destroy that because it would become so expensive to live.
Yeah.
They're talking about maybe a certain portion of those being age-restricted. Which generally, when you have age restricted in a master plan community, you're talking about people with money. And so,
what does that mean, age restricted?
Age restricted is basically anyone, you can't live in it if you're younger than 55, and you can't have anyone living with you. Well, you could have a mate to someone, but you can't have kids.
I didn't know.
So, Amberley, we have a big development outside of Cary. Uh-huh. It's called Amberley. It was done by Del Webb, and that's an age-restricted community.
So those are like retirement places.
Yes, but they're different than like Carroll Woods, which combines sort of, you know, the medical part.
Yeah.
But these are just, they're upper-income communities that are, a lot of them are gated. I don't think this one would be, or others, but some of them are.
Yeah, so this is in the history of the state. The law that I did not realize it was that, because I remember I was in the first wave. My ex-husband for the Research Triangle Park, one of the first wave of IBMers coming, and they had built Parkwood, which was kind of a big development at the time. Which we kind of said, oh no, you know, we didn't want to do that. So
you mentioned Research Triangle Park, and that does bring a connection here, because when I was on the Economic Development Corporation, this is the local economic development group that in Chatham County between 2007 and 2013, and we were talking about trying to attract high-tech jobs to the Pittsburgh area, and we were looking at, this would be a place that would be less expensive, so we would get like companies that are like startups and so forth. We couldn't compete with RTP, obviously, which is an international place. Well, when Chatham Park presented themselves back in 2010 or so, they said, we're going to be the new RTP. And they advertised that, or they promoted themselves as, RTP is full. So we have all this acreage. And they show, you know, soaring pictures of this beautiful acreage. And we're going to preserve all the environment, and we're going to have these new jobs here. Well, the problem is that was before the recession, number one.
Yeah.
But also, RTP isn't.
No.
They're redesigning their own development. They're going to make it more mixed use. They're adding to it. So the whole rationale that they argued that they, what the demand for this is not what it was back then, but they were never required to provide any kind of marketing feasibility to show that there's actually a demand for 16.4 million square feet of office space in Pittsburgh. Think about that. You know, that is more than I think it's like something like 5 pentagons.
See,
this massive amount of space.
When you hear those numbers, they really don't connect with you. But when you say that it's like 5, then you can picture.
The whole point, though, Lori, is they wanted to get the most flexibility with this development.
Yeah.
And so that's why they put these humongous numbers, because they put, and that's why there's no details in this plan. Huge numbers, no details, and they can do anything they want. And they convinced the majority of this town board that if you don't do what we want to do, we're just going to go because we're in with Mr. Goodnight and we'll turn this into its own town and get with the NC State Legislature and have this happen, which they really could not have done without going through a lot of hoops and a lot of work. So that was, you know, slim to no chance. But it was
a threat.
Yeah. Oh, it was a threat. And it's, I don't know, it's very frustrating,
very.
The amount of pressure. They're just really big bullies to a very tiny town of 4,000. But, you know, we're talking 55,000 people. And when they get the most flexibility to do whatever they want in this space, they're trying to push in getting infrastructure done. They've got plans in the works for putting out just infrastructure for some plans up in the northern village in the development, just getting roads and things in and not worrying about lots, because they're just going to flip it and sell all of this over to people that are going to come and develop it. And it's worth a lot more money when they have all this flexibility and the town
yeah.
has none.
Yeah.
So one of the issues that we had with just the practicality, they call it master planned community. That's the whole of the new name, and mixed use. Master plan means that it's
they have
one,
these code words that sound so good.
Well, what it actually means is that one developer becomes essentially the person that can plan the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Unlike a town where you have to have different people come in with different plans and so forth, this is like one greenfield developer, which means, you know, they own the whole property, there's nothing on it, and they come in, and they come in with a whole plan. Okay, that's the concept of it. And it has some benefits, theoretically, that you could plan for all the things that could be problems. You could plan for transit, you could plan for where you're going to put the schools, you could lay out the whole thing, okay? Oftentimes these things don't work out because the people run out of money or the market changes and so forth. That's what happened a little bit with Reston and Columbia. But these people claim they're master plan community, but they're exactly the opposite, because they haven't put out what their plans are. They just have a map that shows they're going to have so many people in this area. And, you know, they say they want to have transit that so people could work there, but you can't do transit unless you do it before you build the houses, because there's a certain amount of people you have to have within a half mile of a transit station
mm-hmm.
to make it financially
mm-hmm.
feasible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have transit in a community, you pretty much need to design your whole community. The same thing with schools. You know, but we have seen nothing. Now, it's possible they have all these plans behind closed doors. You know, the emperor's curtain is shut, but as far as the public, they have not presented any of this stuff. So one of our bottom lines is, if we settle this case or win the case or there's a new town board, is that we want to see a plan
mm-hmm.
that spells out. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at Obi Creek that just got a development agreement
mm-hmm.
with Chapel Hill, or you look at UNC North and their development agreement process, they've spelled out and with a map what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. And it's taken a long
time. And these people have not done that. They, you know.
Yeah.
And the town has.
It's not just that we want a plan, but we want to have a better plan. Right now it's very vague, but what we do have is terrible.
Yeah.
It doesn't consider anything good for the environment, anything good for the town. The consultant that was hired, he said, and quotes, it would cut out the heart of downtown Pittsburgh based on the way the road work and the plan that was existent was structured. It's just nothing in there is good for our community. So it needs to, number one, actually have details. But those details need to be supporting the community with an understanding of the type of community and the type of people that live there. So we need to have the citizen input. It needs to be sustainable. There is a lot of information on how you can do sustainable development these days, a whole bunch of information. And you asked Tim Smith in one of these meetings, the mayor asked him, you know, what about your plan is sustainable? And he turns around to Philip Culpepper, their planner. He's like, what do we have that's sustainable? And he says, well, we have charging stations for electric cars. That has nothing to do with sustainable development design. They don't know, and they clearly don't care.
Yeah.
Or they would work with people that did care and listen and try and actually pull these details in. But that's not their agenda. It's not their agenda at all.
So I think the when you think about, you're sitting here in Carrboro, you know, why should you care about this development in Pittsburgh? And I think it's important that we address that.
Yeah.
Because, and Chapel Hill, that's your audience. Those are the people who are listening.
Yeah.
Number one is that it's going to affect, obviously, carbon, you know, cutting down all those trees and so forth. So it's just adding to that problem. But you think about the traffic. Now, they claim everybody's going to work and live in this development. But if you look at any of these kinds of mixed-use developments, about the highest percentage you ever get is 50%, which means half of the people are commuting out of it. Now, given you got 22,000 residences.
55,000 people.
55,000 people. And you know the average number of car trips per household is in North Carolina? It's about 8 per day.
Really?
So multiply that out by 22,000.
8 per day?
8 per day. Well, you think about it, you go to the store, your kids go, you know, all that kind of stuff. Average. These are averages. So, first of all, you can't have people live and work there and not have the traffic problem unless you can put in the transit. Second thing is, not everybody that lives there, in fact, most that live there, won't be working there. They're going to be commuting to Chapel Hill. They're going to be commuting to Raleigh, to RTP.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, there'll be people in Chapel Hill and Carrboro that'll be commuting there. So just think of that massive increase in traffic. Now, this is going to be a high-end development. They are very resistant to low-income housing.
That's what I was going to ask.
So one of the things we've seen in these kinds of developments is, if you think they're bringing in high-tech jobs, just assume that they can actually do that. For every high-tech job that someone gets paid a professional salary, there are 4 service-type jobs that come with it.
Yeah.
Those people aren't going to be able to afford to live in that community. So this 55,000 may end up being, this 55,000 may end up being more like 75,000 or 80,000 people. And where are those people going to live? They're going to live out in sprawl land, which they'll create, which is going to create, you know, air pollution problems. Of course, we mentioned the water.
We'll get back to the water.
Yeah.
But yeah, because right now, even for Chapel Hill and Carrboro, UNC, people come from, as far as Roxboro, they come from Burlington. Mm-hmm. You know, they come from pretty far. A lot of people can.
Yeah, well, we have people that come from parts of Chatham County, Goldston, all the way on the other side of Chatham County, commute to the hospital. You're going to have tremendous traffic. So that's one aspect of it, you know, the whole transit thing. And particularly when the town is not requiring the developer to show their plans. And they, you know, the discussion came about the fact that all of their roads are basically north-south. In other words, going from Sanford towards Chapel Hill, this bypass. Very little east-west, which would take you downtown, you know.
Mm.
So... But one of the issues came up was, it's one of the board members who goes along with it said, well, some of those roads aren't on Chatham Park. And he said, we shouldn't require them to be responsible for it. That's like saying that I can go and pollute a river, and I'm not responsible for it because if it's off my property, if the river is off my property, I'm not responsible for it.
Mm.
If they create traffic problems, it should be their responsibility to mitigate it, not the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Chapel Hill will experience and Carrboro will experience the traffic issues that come
from
this. But I think there's another kind of deeper issue, which is there's an assumption in the Triangle. You know, we are one of the worst sprawl metropolitan areas in the United States.
I did not know that.
Yes. When it comes to the connecting sprawl, and you define sprawl by how fast land gets eaten up compared to how many people are added,
mm-hmm.
how you're separating residences mm-hmm. from commerce. I mean, obviously RTP created the incredible sprawl mm-hmm. situation because there's nobody living there. Everyone has to commute back mm-hmm. and forth. So we are a very high sprawl area. North Carolina has like four of the top 10 in the country. When you talk Charlotte and Greensboro and Fayetteville. But the other aspect of it is when they looked at mobility, economic mobility, we're one of the lowest metropolitan areas in the entire United States because the two are connected. Because when you have sprawl, you're separating people by income.
Yeah.
And you isolating kids. You've seen this problem. Well, and you're seeing this problem in Wake County when they used to have a very innovative system where they tried to keep down the number of free and reduced kids for school, and then they got all this resistance from mm-hmm. the burbs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be – basically, you could say that Chatham Park is an edge city.
Is the what?
Edge city. In other words, it's a city on the edge of the triangle,
yeah.
which is going to create a much bigger sprawl area.
Yeah.
And the second part of that is that the idea that the citizens have no say in the development of their community.
Well, to clarify that, though, because I think it's important here when you say the citizens have no say. I mean, and the citizens have said a lot. We've communicated,
but we haven't been listening to
one way. But the other part of it that I think is really important for us to share is the fact that the majority of this development is actually in the ETJ. So it's not even in the town.
The
limit.
ETJ.
Right. The extraterritorial
right. jurisdiction.
Okay.
Which means I am one of those residents. I live in the ETJ.
Okay.
I do not get to vote for the town commissioners,
right.
the people that approve the master plan that impacts me very directly, but I didn't get to vote for them, and I won't get to vote in the next election.
Let's pick that up after we finish with our station break,
where everybody
gets a chance to take a breath, if you want to or not. But in the meantime, we have to take care of a little business work here. We are WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. This is a 100-watt radio station, which means that we cover, on a good day, five-mile radius from our transmitter, which is in Southern Village. We are brought to you by the Triangle Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And we're very happy to be doing that. We've been doing it for over 5 years now.
Close to seven.
Yeah. Okay. Over five. Don't want to give our ages away.
Okay.
So, we are underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore right across the street here from us. You didn't know they moved?
I knew they moved, but I didn't know where.
On Lloyd Street, right over there.
Oh, okay, cool.
And they used to be at 405 West Franklin, but now they're at 101 Lloyd Street.
Uh-huh.
Within the sound of my voice, if I choose to raise my voice a little bit. So, hi. Okay. We have a couple of announcements we want to make. First of all, tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock in the Durham Public Library Auditorium, there will be a conversation, we call it, between, in this particular case, the superintendent of schools of Durham. Will be talking about the state of the Durham Public Schools, and his name is Bert Lahm. And after he presents the state, then we have going to have a fairly structured response period where people will actually involve themselves in a conversation about where they think it ought to be taken in the future. And that is tomorrow evening, 6 o'clock, at the main public library in Durham in the auditorium. And It's 300 North Roxborough Street in Durham, and excuse me, refreshments will be served, so we encourage you to all come. Should be over by 8:30, and then we have another announcement. I save the date, but although it's kind of closing in on us, it's about a month away, and that is July 13th in Winston-Salem. The Forward Together and Moral Monday movement is holding a march and rally for voting rights. The federal court will begin the trial of the historic lawsuit NAACP versus McCrory, the voting rights case against Governor McCrory and North Carolina's voter suppression law. This law is the first and worst since the Shelby v. Holder decision, which gutted the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the outcome will impact voting rights across the nation. As Reverend Barber says, North Carolina is our Selma. It's time to get out there and get engaged, get your voting rights back. The schedule is 8 o'clock a.m. in Winston-Salem. There will be a pretrial press conference. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., there will be teach-ins. And at 5 p.m., there will be a march and rally for voting rights. And this is, as I said, is the first day of the trial.
A historic trial.
A very historic trial.
And, so, you know, it's still a little ways to have time to go, but I'm sure we'll be organizing carpools and maybe even some vans or whatever. So stay tuned and pay attention, because this is going to be really, really important for the whole country.
Yes, and as a warm-up, so to speak, join us on July 12th for a Forward Together prayer and worship service at 6 p.m.
And that's going to be where? At the same place?
It doesn't say.
Okay, so we'll be getting updated information to let everybody know about
locations to be announced. Does say that.
To be announced, okay. All right, is that it then for announcements?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And just again to remind you that this program, The Wake Up Call, is sponsored by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And the other big thing is this is our 100th birthday, started by that social worker. Jeffrey and I come from the School of Social Work, Jane Addams, and started went to The Hague trying to stop the First World War. And all these women just found it so powerful to unite together, even those from opposing nations, to try to save their sons and fathers and brothers from bloodshed. And even though we know now that they were not successful, they wanted to keep working on that, and we're still working on it. And this is our 100th birthday, and locally, which was an amazing thing to start such a radical group here in the South, in 1935, we're having our 80th birthday. So stay tuned. We're going to be doing some big party in November.
Yeah, big time party.
Big time party.
So I'm a big supporter of that group. I first interacted with them in the anti-war movement in Washington, D.C. back in 1969.
Great.
They were always one of the foremost groups in our anti-war marches and so forth. So.
Great.
And obviously, I'm very supportive of the civil rights. You mentioned I went to social work, but I was also an attorney. I was a civil rights attorney. So this is a very important issue. And obviously, voting rights is the essence of our democracy.
Yeah. And it's amazing to think that this many years later, we still have to keep having those same struggles and issues and fights.
And it's always been, and which we're involved with, ours isn't voting rights per se, but it's about the powerful trying to silence the voice the people. It's always been about that.
It's all
corporations and people with power trying to silence people, do things behind closed doors, influence without the transparency. So if we can eliminate voters, they already do a pretty good job of that.
They do. They've gerrymandered.
Making everyone cynical about politics because the money and so forth involved.
That's right.
But, let me ask one thing else before we go on. And I really appreciate you having this local radio station. I was a journalist, ran a newspaper in Pittsburgh, so I'm very supportive.
What was the name of your newspaper?
What
was the name of your newspaper?
It was called the Chatham County Herald.
Okay.
And we were unusual for a weekly community newspaper because we were kind of like an investigative paper.
Oh, wow.
And that was a great experience. And I kind of, after the civil rights movement and anti-war movement, that thought that was the next phase if we could start having local news where it wasn't necessarily that you were attacking anything, but just opening up what's going on so that people know.
The conversation,
and that's
yeah.
what we've been losing. You know,
yeah.
that's what we're fighting to some extent here
yeah.
in Chatham County is that nothing is transparent on this process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, we are pretty much the only group that is trying to make it transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Normally as part of a lawsuit, you have something called discovery,
mm-hmm.
which means you ask for documents, you depose the other side, you know, you ask them questions. So far, they have completely refused to give us any documents. So we're going to have to go to court and get a judge to compel them. But that's been pretty much a pattern that has gone
mm-hmm.
along with this process.
Mm-hmm. So this is all part of the struggle for justice. And it's always like the little guy against the big guy.
David and Goliath.
and sometimes David does win, and the struggle is worth it. It's going to be all of us, all our lives. There's always going to be that kind of struggle, but you can't let them silence you. And that's why I so admire what you two are doing. And so are you trying to get other community groups?
Well, we have attempted and got a little success at trying to get speaking other places. We mm-hmm. we have been so, you know, not a big group, so into the battle.
Yeah.
And the other side, you know, the Chatham Park people have done everything they can to make our lawsuit more expensive and more
yeah.
difficult and so
yeah.
forth. So we haven't done as much as that we'd like to, but appreciate your bringing this here. And any group in Carrboro or Chapel Hill
yeah.
that would like to hear about us,
yeah.
we would be more than happy to come anywhere and speak. And
hey,
we would be happy to debate.
People yeah. can learn a lot more about who we are, what we do, and be able to contact us if people want to go
yeah.
to our website.
And we'll do it again at the end. Go
yeah,
ahead.
It's PittsburghMatters.org. That's just Pittsburgh Matters. No,
that's easy
no
to
dash
remember.
Or dot or anything. .org. Yeah, and you can get our contact information. Like I said, you can learn a lot more about what we're about, who we are, and see the mm-hmm. lawsuit and kind of follow the progress. We've also got a Facebook page, which is linked off of there, too. So.
Yeah,
and
so
we have a newsletter that you can sign up for, and you can contribute if you want to help the
hey,
cause.
Hey, folks. And we're talking to Jeffrey Starkweather and Amanda Robertson, who are the co-founders of Pittsburgh Matters and who have been the Davids fighting the Goliath of this humongous development corporation that is just going roughshod over everything that you need to have good development. They're doing the opposite. And
we haven't even absorbed Briar Chapel up north in Chatham County.
You know, the interesting thing about Briar Chapel, that was supposed to be a mixed-use community.
Right.
It's what's been 5 or 6 years, you know, they've
yeah.
been developing. And they still don't have any commercial. You know, Chatham County in the boom era, the bubble area, approved a ton of commercial, most of which never got built, and yet now we're approving more, even though they can't. Demand. But when we last left, we were discussing the extraterritorial jurisdiction. I
yes.
think it's important to get back to that because that affects.
And don't let us forget to get back to water.
Yeah. That affects every community because every community pretty much in the state has extraterritorial jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they had a historical anomaly, essentially, because back in the day, North Carolina was a very rural state.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a large state, had big population, but it was concentrated in small, mm-hmm. medium-sized towns where you had textile, furniture.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to keep them there so they could prevent unions, and that's where the mm-hmm. water was originally, and
mm-hmm.
that was where
But anyway, because there was very little in the way of county government and planning, these towns were sitting in the middle of places where there was no zoning around them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was concern that somebody could build whatever they wanted to right on their edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an obnoxious development. So we ought to give people some a certain amount of space. It was a mile, in some cases 3 miles, that they could control gradually and then annex as they grow. But this has become a bit of a monster, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen the battles about annexation and stuff on Wake County.
Yeah.
You know, and we had the same thing with Cary in Chatham County. So this ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdiction, in Chatham County's case, in Pittsburgh and in Siler City, it's 3 miles, even though the town itself is only 4,000 people. So like Chapel Hill, Carrboro, they probably have a 1 mile extraterritorial jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
And we can't vote, but we're controlled by the town.
Yeah.
But there's another important...
And you can't vote for the board in the town.
We can't vote for the board. But there's another important factor here, and this is one of the things we've been trying to push with the county commissioners so far, haven't gotten as far as we'd like to. But in a way, in a development of this size, the county and the town should be working together, because the biggest cost that this development will bring to Chatham County is going to be borne by county taxpayers, not by town taxpayers, and that is schools, because the county finances the schools. The town doesn't.
Okay.
In fact, 85% of the local expenditures of the county are not expenditures that the town has. So you think of things like jails, social services, that kind of stuff. Those are county expenses. They're not town expenses. So the county can approve something, and they can say, well, this is fiscally positive for us because we're at the amount of taxes. But, houses generally don't pay for themselves. They end up costing you more
mm-hmm.
in services than they pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we've been pushing for is that's why we need an overall plan with these impact assessments, so we can actually look at what is going to be the cost of this development.
Mm-hmm.
What impact is this development going to have on expenses, living expenses? What impact for the need for affordable housing?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all expenses that if we don't do it right and get it up front and build it into a development agreement, we, the taxpayers, will be funding the costs of this development.
Now, wait a minute. I'm confused about something. Is where this development, where they want it to take place, is this within the town or within the extraterritory?
It's in the all of it is in the extraterritorial.
Well, if it's in the extraterritorial, how come the county was not the one to make that decision?
Because the
how
county gave the town the right to control this. Our position is if they don't do it responsibly, they should take it back, which they can legally do, but you have to give a 2-year notice. But so far, the county has not been willing to do that. But I think there's a real problem with these ETJs in general,
yeah.
because they've actually been used in some places to discriminate against minority communities, where you could control the zoning, but you don't want to annex them. They had
mm-hmm.
that down in
Give
Southern
them services,
Pines.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some historic, there's been some major cases where they don't. You know, and we have some pockets in Pittsburgh that are very poor minority communities that are actually surrounded almost by the town in at least 3 ways that aren't in the town.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know historically why that's true, but you've got to think to yourself, well, you know.
This has happened in other places,
this
too.
This has happened in other places. So,
they don't want to annex me because they know how I'll vote.
Well, and I'm right across the line on the other side of town.
Yeah.
So my feeling almost, and maybe this goes against what legal municipalities would think, I think we ought to abolish ETJs.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're, you go out to other urban states, you don't have ETJs.
Mm-hmm.
They were designed for when we were a rural state, and we didn't have zoning in the counties. One thing, if you got rid of the ETJs, it would be an incentive for the towns and the counties to come together because they're both kind of like mutual destruction.
Mm-hmm.
One could do something to the other. Mm-hmm. So it would be in the interest, I mean, the town could always annex somebody, or likewise, someone could just develop. So I think there would be this incentive for counties and towns to cooperate on development.
And it certainly seems to me that the county bears a huge responsibility then if this development is going to be in the county, not really within the town borders.
They will annex it. That's part of the agreement. But they don't want to be annexed at the beginning, because just think about 8,000 acres that all of a sudden was taxed. That's not going to be developed for 30 years. So they don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So it's a situation where the people have what do you do when you are a citizen in ETJ, like Amanda's right next to this big development, and you can't vote for these board members, so they don't have to listen to you,
mm-hmm.
But they can control your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
They have essentially turned over the town to these developers, because they've rolled over and everything, and they've given them all the flexibility. In fact, some of us jokingly say, maybe we ought to just change the name of the town to Chatham Park.
Yeah. It's the elephant.
But you should have just as much rights as a small landowner, as this big landowner has, but you don't.
Yeah.
Because they are going to impact you. You have no vote on it. And the only people we can vote for are the county commissioners, but the county commissioners have no control over this. So it's a really catch-22 situation.
Well, that's one of the claims in our lawsuit as well.
That's true, that we were unequally treated, that this... we're claiming that this whole thing is unconstitutional because they've essentially treated one landowner with special favors over every other landowner, that the ordinances are so vague that the ordinary person couldn't determine what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we call unconstitutional vagueness, that it... You know, rezonings are supposed to be in North Carolina compatible or consistent with your land use plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the land use plan for Pittsburgh called for preserving a lot of this area about next to Jordan Lake and the Haw River from development. But these people have completely ignored that.
Which brings us back to water, which sounds like it would be a big zoning thing to. Halt this or slow it down, seems to me you should get support from Chapel Hill and Carrboro regarding if the water with Jordan Lake, if they're right on the edge there.
Well, obviously Chapel Hill as an entity can't do anything, but people in Chapel Hill and Carrboro,
people listen
can do something by supporting us by speaking up.
And Owassa, where has Owassa made any stand on this?
No, I mean, governments generally do not
want to step on the toes
of other governments. I know from having talked to some town board members in Chapel Hill. I don't know about Carrboro. I guess I know some. Yeah, I know at least one Carrboro, and I've talked to former board members in Durham, one's existing board member in Durham and Wake, and they're all concerned about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's limited they can do because we don't really have any kind of regional growth controls, or we have no state growth controls like they have.
But there is some kind of a region. Isn't there some kind
the
of
water.
A region? No, I think there's...
There's Triangle J. But they have no powers.
Oh, they have no powers.
No powers. And most states that are urban have put in what we call state growth controls, so that they require certain plans that have to address these kinds of things. North Carolina tried to do that with Joe Hackney back in about 2000, but that got nixed by the home builders and realtors immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So now, of course, we're run by basically the home builders and realtors and all the corporations, so they're not obviously going to do that. And the state legislature is constantly taking away from local governments any powers. It's a lot of powers that they have,
yes,
particularly
they are.
If they tend to be liberal governments like Wake County or Chapel Hill. Durham had an ordinance it was an ordinance that said anybody that does contract with the town has to meet a certain minimum wage or living wage.
Mm-hmm.
State legislature banned that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, it's part of a pattern of taking away authority of local people to control their own communities.
Well, even if Triangle J, though, doesn't have, like, a lot of real power, wouldn't it be helpful if they came out expressing even concern about this? I mean,
I think it would really make a huge difference if they did. And one of the things that I did want to make sure that I mentioned tonight is there is a public hearing on Monday, the 22nd. I think that's this Monday coming up, for this third master plan on the table that basically Pittsboro Matters sort of forced them to do because they had to go back and go through approving the PDD ordinance again about a month and a half ago, I guess, due to procedural issues dealing with the proper notice. So we forced their hand, and they're having to do another master plan. And I would really encourage your listeners to,
yes,
you know, if not come to the public hearing, to write to the town commissioners, but also to the county commissioners. And you can get those just doing a Google search online,
okay,
to get the email addresses. But I think letting them know, and this is, as Jeffrey said, it really is more individuals, but certainly Triangle J and other organizations that are local, if they were to also write and say, look, this is something that needs a lot more time in planning. We need to have, you know, studies done, environmental impact studies, economic impact studies done. This is huge, and it's going to impact all of us. But, you know, this is a chance right now, Monday.
Monday. And where's it going to be? Monday at
the
Town Government Center, which is across from the Food Lion, right down from the Circle area, but across the street.
Across the street
from Food Lion.
Let me.
Oh, but it's not by the court. It's not by the courthouse.
No, it's not in the courthouse. We've had some there, but they're just doing it in the regular.
We're hoping to flood the door, though. We really.
Okay, so.
But going to water and regional stuff, you mentioned.
Wait,
that.
I just want to get back how to get. So you go like around the courthouse.
You go to the courthouse and turn to the east.
Turn east. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's called East Street, and you go about half a mile, maybe.
Yeah.
You can't miss the Food Lion will be on the right, and it says Town Government Center or Town Government Building on the left.
So it'll be on the left?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And what time?
7 p.m. Monday.
Okay, so Monday. Okay, so let's pay attention to that. It's a public hearing, and you're getting a lot of publicity out about it, I hope.
We're trying to. You know, it's one of the things that's, I hate to say, discouraging about this.
Yes, it's hard
is to we've had now, I think this will be the fifth or the sixth public hearing, because they've had to redo the plan like three times the first time.
So this is the third
and
plan.
Except for one public hearing where they got a bunch of their people who were mostly professionals and outside the county to speak, and they had a few people get up there and say, we need jobs, but nothing else about it. Virtually every public hearing, virtually everybody that has spoken against what they're planning to do right now. Not against the project per se, but against how they're basically letting them get away with it not really having
Which
a
is
plan.
Why I think it's important to write the county commissioners.
Yeah.
You know, this has just been going to the town, and as we've discussed, the county really could go in and take this back and could go in and have some serious influence over this area, and they just need to understand people really care about this.
Yeah. And is there an election coming up for the county commissioners that you can say this is going to
There's going to be an election for the town board in which a majority could change. And it's going to be in November. We have three commissioners up for election. Two of them voted for Chatham Park. One voted against it.
This is county commissioners.
No, this is town.
Town.
This,
you're calling commissioners.
They're called town. They're called, yeah, town commissioners.
Okay, so the town board will be November elections, and there'll be three up for.
There's three people up for election, and of course.
Bette Foley voted against Chatham
Park.
Yeah,
she voted for against it, and then two other commissioners that are running.
So you want to support?
We want to support Bette. She's fantastic and
so,
was very brave against all of you know, these huge developers and a lot of influence
I mean, we're not as an organization. We're not involved in the election per se, but. I'm pretty certain there will be candidates running who are not going to be running against Chatham Park. They're going to be running to say we should put Pittsboro first ahead of Chatham Park's financial interest. We should make sure that we're protecting the quality of life, we're protecting the environment, and we're getting the information we need to hold them accountable. It shouldn't be where the outside developer is driving the car. It should be the citizens.
Well, it is, and there's been a lot of buzz in the media lately, nationally and locally, I think, about the lack of representation, real representation, where we vote for someone, and then they actually do what we want them to do, that we have a voice. And I think that's a real, real big problem across the country, locally and nationally. And I think as we exercise our votes coming up in this next election period, we need to remember that this is important. And I've personally really never taken pause when I voted for my local representation until I started getting involved with this humongous issue. And now I realize, wow, I mean, this is such a huge responsibility, even at the local level. And I would just really encourage people to really stop and think about, you know, who you vote for. And it does matter. Get to know them and what they stand for.
And when are the county commissioners, do they have any?
Well, they just got elected in last November, so they'll be up in...
Is it a two-year?
16. No, they're four-year terms.
Oh, it's four-year terms. So they've all just been elected for 4 years.
There are three, but one only got elected for 2 years.
But pressure can be put on them even in elections.
Oh, yeah, and we have some... We have commissioners that are supportive. We just haven't gotten them... gotten that far yet with it.
Yeah.
But no, we've elected some
education
good progressive
and it's constantly like, you know, the Chinese
letters
school.
Matter.
Letters matter and just keeping at them. And
this is another issue, and I'm having observed Chapel Hill and Carver. I think you guys are pretty good at this. I think there's this tendency in America, particularly when it comes to something complicated like planning and so forth, to think that, oh, we just need to rely on experts.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know how the battles we did going back in the 60s about, quote, experts. Yeah. How many times did the experts say we won the Vietnam War?
Yeah, yes.
What do the experts say about all the dams we built and destroyed rivers and so forth? But anyway...
And now we're tearing them down in a lot of places, yes.
I think the important thing is that we know from research now that if you have a cross-section of people that come together, like what we call charrettes... design things, when they have studied the kind of ideas that they come up with as opposed to hiring a firm, I'm not saying that you don't have experts guide you, that you're often come up with more creative ideas when you have a diversity of people. And it's one of the arguments I think has been made for diversity in general, is that you get more creative ideas, more alternative ways of looking at things, you're more likely to come up with a solution that is people-centered and that will work. And people, if you have a variety of people, somebody's going to say, well, wait a minute, if we go down this direction, we could have this disaster. But if you get a bunch of experts who are you know, enamored by their technical skills and so forth, they may miss something because it doesn't fit their models. That's something like the financial collapse.
Yeah.
Look at all the math experts that were up there telling them that, you know, housing prices will never all go down at the same time.
Right.
No, that was the belief system.
But
you
another point I want that I think it's really important for all of us to keep in mind. A lot of times we talked about the cynicism where people. With the big money, but local elections are where we still have power in our local communities. Yep. You know, when you get to the national level, it gets more abstract, and the money, et cetera. I'm not saying to not pay attention, but if you want to feel empowered as a citizen, like you said, get involved. You see how it works, and that's where you can feel this real power and real possibility. For change. And I think that more and more, I'm hoping people are realizing that.
The thing about Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh is a small place, very small place. But when you get down to the size of a Chapel Hill, a Carver, a Pittsburgh, you can't really buy an election if the citizens
That's
go
right.
out because people can go door to door. They can call people.
That's right.
You can get
you have
to
a
every
fighting
single,
chance.
Yeah.
We need to do things like ask for a reiteration of the website and stuff like that.
Yeah, again, thanks so much for having us.
Our website. We're delighted. Thank you so much for coming. This has been really, we're learning a lot. And I hope our listeners are, too.
I am so glad. I hope so, too. But if you need to learn more, you can go to pittsburghmatters.org. That's our website. We'd really appreciate your support, and send any questions to us there, too.
And we don't forget Monday.
We are a nonprofit, so stay tuned. All your